Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the SOM TV podcast. My name is Jason Wise. On today's pod, I'm going to answer the age-old question you may have never asked yourself. If you've broken your nose multiple times playing a professional sport and broken the noses of many others, but you're a huge wine collector, how do you smell the wine that you collect? I'm going to interview with Claire Coppi. We're going to interview Nicolas Deslauriers, who is one of the NHL's top enforcers, which means he deals out a lot of damage and he takes a lot of damage, but he also loves wine. And we're going to talk about how that mixes, matches, and gets in the way of each other. Before I do that, I want to tell everybody listening, you can get 50% off SOM TV right now. That's $25 for an entire year of the streaming service. Go to SOMTV.com and enter 50 off, 50 OFF at SOMTV.com. We have our brand new documentary about oysters coming called The Oyster Farmer very soon, and much more. So go to SOMTV.com and are 50 off. It's exciting to be joined by Nicolas Deslauriers, played in the NHL for quite a while, and Claire Coppi, who definitely did not play in the NHL.
Definitely not.
But dealt with equally mean people on the floor of restaurants, I'm sure. Nicolas, this is great. I hate to say it, but I think you are my first French-Canadian that has ever been on the SOM TV podcast. And so I'm probably gonna hammer you a little bit with what the hell that means. I think I think Americans have a big blind spot for that. But before we do, I want to talk a little bit about your career. Now, you've gotten into wine collecting. From what I understand, you're rather obsessive about wine, which I love the progression. But let's start with your career. What's the perception of you in the sport of the NHL? I know you're known as a really, really nice guy. You know, just a real sweetheart.
Yeah, I know. I'm more of a goal scorer kind of guy. You know, I score 50 goals a year. No, that's all the things I wish. But started really young. Obviously, from Montreal. You know, that's pretty much our religion down there. And it's funny to say my full development of trying to be like those Sidney Crosbys and everything never panned out for me. And you know, I got lucky enough to play in the queue, and then long story short, getting drafted. And it's all about opportunities. And you know, I'm a bigger guy, so to stay in the NHL, had to use something else than my hockey stick. So and it's been probably 14, 15 years pro, 10 years in the NHL. So it's been fun. It's been a hell of a ride, that's for sure.
So what do you do on the ice? What is, describe to me what an enforcer means. What is this like? What is this position? It sounds ominous.
Yeah, no, I think it changed from a long time ago. Obviously, if you think about in probably even 60s, 70s, 80s, probably even 90s was more of an enforcer is just you fight and that's your game. And like I said, I was an offensive defenseman, got drafted as a defenseman in junior, and it's almost a point per game. And then I had to switch my transition of being a forward my third year pro when I was playing in Manchester, New Hampshire, and got the opportunity of, you know, playing more and scoring goals. And I got traded to Buffalo, and that's when they decided to kind of switch me as a forward with my size and the physicality that I was bringing. And obviously, you didn't do that much in the American League, but as soon as there's a big hit, when I started, was you got to answer the bell right away. And you know, it took me a couple years to, you know, the main thing for me that had to switch was when to fight and when not to, because now this NHL is all about momentum swings. You know, a big hit can bring you momentum in a fight as well, but it goes both sides, you know.
So what do you mean when you have to figure out when to fight and when to not? I know there's a lot of wine drinkers listening to this podcast, and every single time I have sports people on, they get mad and they're always like, why sports? But I try to, for me, all of this stuff bleeds together. Wine, sports, culture, it's all the same thing. And so when you say in hockey, you have to choose when to fight, I can only imagine your wife is like, what does my husband do for a living? It's like, is he a hockey player or does he just ramp himself up to go fight people on the ice? Well, how do you know when to fight somebody? And like, what, I mean, you get traded to teams and you fought with all these guys. Like, I just think it's such an odd profession.
Can't take it personally, can you?
No, obviously it's for people that don't follow hockey, but that don't understand the meaning of it. I get it. It's complicated. You want games to finish 7-6 because you want to see goals, you know, but for me, knowing when, like I said, it took me probably 2 or 3 years of the momentum swings. You know, now if you think about momentum, if you ask somebody that doesn't know much of hockey, they're going to probably say power play, penalty kill, and all those things. But for me, is obviously I don't have the luxury of being able to skate with the puck down and back, and doing all those things was finding my way in the NHL of punching people in the face pretty much. And it's just the knowing part. I think it's more of there's been less and less in the NHL, but there's almost one per team that can answer the bell. And for me, it's just recently, obviously, I've been fighting a lot the last 4 years. It's more of having that respect as well. When you're down 2-0 and the team's not going well, I know that it's time for me to try to get the things turning around. And when you get a buyer to fight, you know, sometimes you end up playing 2 months later and it's the opposite. So I think the respect that I have for people that do the certain jobs that we do, that's when you kind of re-give him the favor and hope that it doesn't switch. But you know, to come back to the when and why, hockey's about scoring. I think it's that. I think it's more of they're sticking up for your teammates as well when somebody gets hit on a cheap shot or just hurting somebody. You know, it happens a lot in a hockey game, man. There's, like I said, I'm not saying that I would survive in the 70s. I think I would get crushed every time. But for me lately, it's been defending my people. And the funny things that Claire was saying too, you know, like you get traded and things like that. But, you know, I have one guy here that I fought twice, Nick Sealer, and we had a hell of a fight last year. And he's one of my closest friends here. So it's kind of, you know, for me, it's kind of like that old generation of, you know, what's between the boards is my team, myself, and I hate the other guys. And off the boards, I'll shake your hand. And
are you bound to get in a fight? And we're going to bring this back to wine here because I think it's really fascinating. Are you bound to end up getting punched in the face every day at work, pretty much?
That's what brings bread on the table for me lately. So I think it's a thing. But no,
there's what you got to do.
There's teams that I know that it's probably a 90-95% chance I'm going to fight that
which
night.
Teams?
You know?
Which teams?
Well, you had Colorado with McDermott, obviously. You know, with Minnesota now, Ryan Reeves. No, there's a couple. There's a couple lately that have been asking me, and it's been great. But, you know, like I said, there's...
they've been asking me.
there's I don't know. It's weird. You know, talking about that, it's so funny because you look at the playoffs right now that are playing. It's all about scoring. There's been one fight in X amount of games, and... you know, the playoffs is a different breed, but
gosh,
it's crazy. I don't know, like to come back to that, I think it's funny to say I get paid to do that.
It's amazing. I really do. I can't imagine what it's like for your kids and your wife to watch the game. Are they like, yeah, kick his ass, dad? Or are they like, uh-oh.
That's what I would be like.
dad's in a fight. I mean, we're going to bring this back to wine because I just think, you know, two things. One, I would, there's many people in the wine business I'd love to fight. It'd be awesome. don't let this posh hairstyle I have fool you. I'd love to fight some of these people, but I won't name any names, especially if Claire's there to get my back.
Yeah, I'd have your back.
But I would assume, you know, you've become a big wine collector and it's something that you're real passionate about. In fact, that's why you're on the podcast. But I would imagine taking a few hits to the face can't be the best thing for your palate and your nose. And
I can't hide it. You know, getting punched in the face is not great. The smelling part is the one that I don't have. You know, it's funny to say. My wife didn't drink much red wine, was always on white and rosé, and you know, now she's starting to drink a lot of red, and I pretty much ask her what it smells like because I can't smell it. So
you can't smell at all?
I do, but I don't catch the same notes as probably 4 or 5 years ago. You know, it's you know, when you break your nose a couple of times, the smelling, the aroma doesn't go to the brain as quick, I think. But no, it's that's the hard part. You know, I still pick up on things, but I don't know. I don't know if it's the same thing for you, Claire, but my wife never really drank red, and her smelling is on point. I don't know if it's a thing. Mm-hmm. We have a full case at home too. It's all the scents, so it's a wine case, but with all the perfumes of pretty much everything you get, vanilla to oak and everything. It's all small bottles.
That's cool.
And it's a gaming kind of night for us. You know, we pick up a card and just, hey, what's this? And you have to try to guess it. So it's kind of I get beat every time there. And obviously it's not fun, but it's funny. It's funny, but I still pick up some things, but I go more off more to visual and the taste now, that's for sure.
I have noticed now, I don't know if it's, I've noticed women are very good blind tasters. This is something that has been, a lot of wine professionals will say. I don't know if it's that women are actually better at smelling. I think they just might be a little more
in
tune.
It's the vocabulary.
Yeah, maybe it's the vocabulary. Yeah. I mean, but there definitely is something. I think it goes women, men, enforcers, and hockey. Those are the three, levels.
I think we get beat all the time too because we decide to do wine tasting after our third bottle. So that's why we kind of.
That's like, right. Yeah. That one. Maybe it is no. The women are just not drinking as much.
Got a funny story. Obviously, playing in the NHL, I get to meet people, but I was playing in Anaheim for 3.5 years. And just when that short season we had with COVID, mm-hmm. we had four or five families that stayed in Anaheim for that time. And would set up every Friday night, and I had a full setup with the bags, and it was a full wine tasting. I had the full palettes of smell that you can think that it is, and we would do that. We'd buy 6 or 7 bottles of wine and try to rate them on which one we think is which, and then our top 5, and we did that for months. So it was kind of a family bonding. We had the kids playing downstairs in the playroom, and we had 6-7 guys with their wives just doing a wine tasting at home. So everybody would pick. So this week would be France. Next week would be Italy, and then California, and just go around and no budget in wine bottles. And people would come over, and we don't know the wine. I would give them bags. It would be bag 1 to 8, and we don't know what it is. And we go off that, and at the end of the night, we'd get surprised a lot.
Yeah, well, I just want to say, you know, for everybody who thinks wine is only for soft people, I just want to say you're all wrong. Look at this guy. it's, you know, you don't have to just drink beer or whiskey to be tough.
He'll kick your ass, and he'll do it with a great glass of wine.
I want to see the person who calls out Nicholas as being wrong in a blind tasting. So not your best move.
That'd be awesome.
What is the culture in the NHL with wine? Have you seen it grow a lot more?
A ton. Yeah. You know, I think at least I would say just here, you know, every time we go on the road, we have the luxury of, you know, landing the night before so we can go for dinner, and every restaurant we grab a bottle, and there's at least, would say, half of the team that wants a glass, or then we, you know, go off that. We have one of my close Finnish friends here, and I feel bad for him because I got him into wine maybe too much, and now he's just buying bottles like there's no tomorrow. But every time we go to dinner together, it's all about, you know, hey, let's try this one. But yeah, no, I think, I know for a fact that just playing in multiple teams that there has to be more than 50% of the NHL that, you know, loves wine and are maybe not attached to it as much as other people, but that have kind of a meaning into it. And it's obviously when you talk about alcohol, you don't want to be saying that, you know, this is good for you, but it's great that people just, there's so much to learn. Like just talking to you guys, and I personally think I know a decent amount when I talk to people that don't know, but when I talk about wine to somebody that knows wine or a sommelier from a restaurant, I don't know shit. So yeah. There's so much to learn.
To know. Exactly.
It's insane. It's the fun part of it because every day could be a topic of something. So many bottles, there's so many vineyards, there's just everything. And now obviously me being in Canada, you don't have the season for that. You know, I think we're known for our icy wine in Niagara Falls and things like that. But, you know, it's being able to visit and go around the States a lot, and technology, you know, I'm a big last bottle guy. You know, I'm on that website probably every day. I get notification if there's a bottle that comes up. You know, Vivino, wine.com, I'm on pretty much everything. So it's
wow.
It gets going.
You got to keep fighting to afford this lifestyle.
I could spend a lot of money on that, you know.
Yeah. But wine is one of those hobbies that can be quite dangerous if you get too deep. When you're on the road, do you have restaurants that you're like, these are my favorite restaurants to go to in a city? Because we have people that listen all over Europe, all over the United States. I mean, I'd love Do you have some restaurants in certain cities that you're like, when I'm in Toronto, here's where I go. Where I'm in Tampa, here's where I go. Where I'm in New York City.
Yeah, no, obviously New York, I've always been going to Catch. That's been my place. Toronto, I always go to one of my sushi spots there. I think in Tampa is Burns with the biggest biggest wine.
That's a dangerous place. That's a dangerous place.
I got a funny story. I was playing in Montreal and we had, I was with Carey Price, Shea Weber, Jeff Petrie.
So cool.
So everybody had a different year born. So it was great. The sommelier comes up. He's like, what do you guys want for drink? And we just decided to choose because there's that menu of wine. That wine list is probably this thick. It's insane. We just picked a bottle each of our year and we just drink that. So it's kind of – that was probably one of the best experiences I had because we went downstairs and that place is – it's humongous. It's insane. But we picked a bottle from our year and – so it went from 86 to 87. I'm a 91, so obviously not a great year, but we find something. And, you know, those are restaurants. But in every place, I'm a big guy that just loves food as well. So I'm not going to go to a little steakhouse. I'd rather go to a place that has a good wine selection as well. And, you know, I've been lucky enough to play in good cities. You know, there's so many restaurants that I try to go that it's hard, you know. Being from Montreal, we have a great food in Montreal too, and the summers are unbelievable. And I have a couple spots that Beatrice is one of those, and Old Montreal. I go a lot to Jatoba and Garde Manger. So it's kind of those spots that are hitting gems that have great wine. But if I had to pick one, I think it would be in every city, probably more of an Italian guy, you know, Italian food, and they have great wine too.
That's great. That's really great. All right. So let's talk about French Canadians. I want you to set up what that means. And I don't mean to sound stupid here. I think Americans or the general populace will think, well, French is French. And what is the difference between French Canadian and somebody who's actually from France?
We don't speak the same way at all. I would compare it to you guys talking to somebody from London. You know, the kind of accent they have and the slang that they use is kind of similar a little bit to France for me in Montreal. No, I was saying that just before we got online. You know, we start with strike one right away. I don't know why. And even in sports, I grew up being, we have what, two French guys here. And now being older is different. I get more respect. And with what I do on the ice too, I get a lot more respect. But I think it's more of a, I don't know. It's US, US is something. I think you guys are something bigger than other people. I think that's the way that you kind of see it. And when you see other people coming in is, I don't know if it's a thing like that, but it's hard to explain. It's
are you trying to say Americans have an ego? Because there's no way that's true.
You guys are way better in wine than us, so I think you win on that. So that's good. But no, I think it's just that. Obviously, it's probably the same if you reverse the role for other people that comes to Canada. I think we find it more suitable to speak with people that are from our country and things like that. But I think it's everywhere like that. You know, I think everybody's welcoming and things like that. I have no issues of saying I live in the States now. I got four kids. I got two kids that are born in the U.S. So, you know, for me, I don't pick where home. I think it's my kids that pick where home is. And, you know, right now I say we're sort of American.
Yeah. No, of course. Of course. When growing up, what was there wine in your house? You grew up, you're born in Quebec, right?
Yes. There was not much wine, to be honest with you. You know, my dad, we have a moving company and he wasn't drinking much. If he was more beer. But like I said, back home, we don't have the luxury of, you know, going to Total Wine or things like that. You know, we don't have the luxury of, we have a SAQ that's more of a liquor store, but you'll find one big wall of wine, and importing wine is so complicated too with Canada that our options are really slim. You know, just for me, I always go to the same spot back home and I get a text to see if there's bottles that comes in. I give her a list of what I like and what can come in, and I can order some, but you pay extra for pretty much the shipping and then bringing the wine from another country to here, you get the taxes on that. So I think it's everywhere around probably Canada is the same thing.
Canada's not made it easy. I mean, the U.S. is not either, but Canada especially has made it very hard to go from state to state or province to province. You know, it's very, very, very tricky. So
yeah, no, it's funny you say that because when I got traded from Anaheim to Minnesota, I pretty much knew I wasn't re-signing in California, and I had the luxury of signing pretty much where I wanted, and I ended up being in Philly. But I moved all my things from the house I had in California to Minnesota, and that was pretty easy until I had to move everything from Mini to here to Philly. But with all the states, I had to sign a waiver because I had 265 bottles of wine. But from states to states, you have to have a license. So finding a mover that has a license of transporting alcohol was a gong show. But
yeah, Pennsylvania has some weird laws for alcohol.
Made it safe, and you know, I had all my bottles and they were intact, so that's a good thing. I think that's why it's hard to Canadian have a good wine collection or things like that. I think it has to be a pure luck, or like when I pass from here to go home, usually I know it's me and my wife, so I can bring 4 bottles. Obviously, you try to bring a little bit more. And
I was going to say, I've never followed the rules. I you know, we sort of just go through and hope they don't check. But
exactly, that's the thing. That's a risk you do. And you know, I think I had a gift from one of my close friends that sent me a 1.5 liter Chateau Dixième.
And oh, Jesus.
Oh, okay.
I was like, do I bring 2 still, or I just bring 1 that counts for 2? And obviously knowing that if you get caught, you can pay the taxes up to 300% on that bottle. And God knows that bottle is expensive. So I was like, we'll just bring 1 just in case. So, yeah. You know, I risk it sometimes, but you know, I think I'm lucky enough that I have a decent amount of bottles at home in Montreal in my wine cellar, and I did bend the laws a little bit sometimes.
If they do catch you, you can just bluff on the price on that too. I highly doubt that like the border patrol knows the price of Chateau Dixième.
I agree, but I think I'm an unlucky guy that the guy is maybe a little bit of wine guy, and he just takes out Vivino and scans it and sees it's, I don't know, 1800. Oh, we'll charge you 200% on that.
Oh, man.
You know, so.
Well, that's when you need to drop your gloves, I guess.
Yeah. I think they're more powerful than me there, so.
Yeah, probably not a good idea.
That's good.
But yeah, I think that's the main thing in Canada. I think we're lucky with the ice wine that we have and kind of those little wineries, you know, when I drive home, I see a lot of little wineries, but you know, the weather's not for a good red wine. It's more of those white wines that are sweet, I think I would call it. And it's, you know, we're unlucky on that. There are some good spots that you can find downtown Montreal that are kind of special selection places to buy wine, but you got to pay more.
Do you miss the food from where you're from? What's the food like up in Montreal and Quebec? What would you say is like classic stuff?
Well, I think all you guys know poutine is the thing. You know, every time I go home,
it's my favorite drinking food. I've never had it sober, so maybe that's why, but it's my favorite drinking food amongst my favorite in the world. I love
100%, 100%. And now, and the thing though, now it's like, cuisine is becoming so much a thing now that people do a lot of new things. You know, you can get a nice pulled pork poutine, but you got to stay with the original. You know, I think that hits home. And think about mom and dad, you know, not being at home that much was more of a lot of crock pots and things like that, shepherd's pie. And, you know, food for us back home, we worked hard. You know, I come from a family that I think even now it's what I get is what I work for. I don't get anything for free. You know, it's been our thing as a family that, you know, whatever you want in life, you got to work for it. And come from a family that we worked our ass off for everything. And, you know, that's why I think talking about food and everything, we weren't pampered a lot on that. But making a poutine or buying one for $3, it's not too expensive. So I would save my cash for that when I was younger. But every time I drive back home with the kids and the wife, we always stop at the same spot, a little shack that's pretty much a back of a Sprinter van or a little mobile home. And old lady there makes the best one. So that's our spot.
What's your wine for poutine? And what's in the classic poutine? Describe it to me and then tell me what wine you'd have with that.
That's tough. What wine? That would be tough. But, you know, I think any bottle of wine with a poutine is good because you're so excited to eat it. And but a great poutine. You got to start with just a nice crispy fries, good gravy. And the thing that you guys don't have here is cheese curds, you know, the good ones. That's it. You don't need to add anything to that. That's why I'm telling you, with all this food now, you know, it's great to try some, but you know, the classic one's always the best. You know, my wife's a big peppercorn sauce, and she likes that on her poutine, and that's the only twist that we put in our poutine. So,
man, I want poutine right now. This is maybe I will start drinking. let's end this with just, what are you collecting? Because I know, you know, we've talked more about around wine, but what is it that you're collecting? You say you have a few hundred bottles of wine. What is it mostly made up of?
Right now, it's pretty much everything. But like I said, like I'm a big Cardinal guy, Quintessa.
A lot of Napa.
But the one connection that I got that was probably eye-opener for me to kind of go a little bit more was Penfold. I was really close in California with the distributor of Penfold. And I got some, obviously, you guys know a lot of wine, but they work with so many bins. And I probably have 16 to 20 bottles that they don't even have the same bin on it. So it's kind of all everywhere. But obviously, the Grange is one of the best one, Quantrum. Like I said earlier, Châteauneuf du Pape, you know, the Left Bank, obviously with those wines are so good. But my collection has been everywhere, to be honest with you. It's, you know, what started me kind of like collecting a lot was my first book that I read. And it's Thinking Like a Sommelier. When COVID hit, I just got into it a little bit more and just buying that book and just reading. And I still have it here, like on my phone. I have it right here in my notes. All the wines that book pretty much says, what's an iconic wine, what's a best value, and what's a must. And I have that from a Merlot to Sauvignon Blanc to everything. And I'm fortunate enough to try some at decent spots. But, you know, I started reading that book, and that's when it got me into buying a little book of tasting notes, doing all this, buying different glasses of wine for certain bottles of wine. Like I said, like I told you guys, there's so much to learn that I feel like I don't know. The big question of, like, what's your favorite one? I don't know. If I had to bring one right now, let's say we're having dinner or something, I would probably bring my 2014 Quintessa. I think that's probably one of the ones that I enjoy, and it's just such a nice bottle. But if we want to get fancy, I'm going to bring probably, I have so many. That's the thing, you know. I think the Penfold, I think it's the Bin 704 is one of my favorite wines. I think it's $120, but it's pairs with everything. But like I said, it's more about all the connections that I have. You know, I have on speed dial, I got the part owner of Mount Owl with Dunn's Vineyard, and they're doing a nice setup for me with my kids. I want to buy a bottle of wine for each year, so when they just let it age. But obviously, my last son is in 2020 with the forest fire. So now I'm pretty much just asking them to do a nicer bottle, a 16 or 18, but put a label of 2020 on it just so it's a drinkable wine. And main thing of knowing a lot of wine now is that you can't buy just one bottle. You know, now when I buy a bottle, I have to buy minimum of two. Usually it's always three. So if I like it, I have two extra or one extra, and I'm starting to Sharpie down some bottles of when to drink and everything. And, you know, I got cellar tracker, when to drink it. And, you know, it's I'm full blown, but at the same time, I feel like I'm talking so much, but I don't know much, you know?
It's because you love it. I mean, this is kind of the spirit of why we have this pod and why we have Somme TV and all this stuff, is we love this. And it's really, your passion is, I have to say, it's awesome. It's great. I think there's a point where people cross and they think they know what they're talking about.
Well, you can get surprised by anything. That's the same thing. Like some people cannot drink a lot of wine, but knows more of one bottle that I know of, you know, like, I could say, like, being in California, like I said, like we got a trip booked for next year with the foundation in NHL. You get to kind of bid on things. And I got a nice Sonoma trip for me and the wife next year. So it's kind of, those are things now that I look for. I don't look for signed jerseys or a trip for Disney, you know, like we've done all that with the kids. Now it's more, hey, I want a weekend with the wife. So now it's more that. But, you know, it's there's so much to learn. And, you know, being, I think the best thing for me that switched into getting more involved into it was playing in California was the best thing for me. And, you know, it's been good. We've been having some great times. And, you know, being in every single city that we go, I get to see some wines that I've visit or things like that. You know, like I think Robert Mondavi is probably one of the best things to talk about to people because this guy touches everybody's wallet. You can buy a bottle for $5 or you can buy a bottle for $5,000, you know, it's, you go from that single bottle to an Opus One that he did with somebody else, you know, those are things that there's so much, it's insane. It's right now I have a wine cellar at home and it's a 800 spots and I think there's maybe 400 in it and it looks empty. So every time I walk by, I'm like, nah, I got to buy more. So it's kind of, you know, the luxury of having two houses right now is that I have wine here and wine.
That's true.
I have wine here and wine there. So there's always something to learn about.
Well, Nicholas, I don't care what any of these guys on the ice say about you. You're a very sweet man.
And, you are.
And I will look anytime you want to come over and fight me and have poutine, I am ready.
That's fine with me. Okay. That's fine with me. We might skip the fighting, but we won't skip the poutine, but we'll add some bottled wine to there.
I love it. Well, thank you for being on. It really means a lot. And if you want some Rex in Sonoma, I'm more than happy to set you up at some places. So thanks for being on the podcast. Appreciate it. I want to thank our producer, John Adams, who produced this podcast, Claire Copia and Nicholas Delorier, for being on. And also to remind you, go to SomTV.com, enter 50 off for an entire year at 50% off of SomTV.com. We have another episode of the SomTV podcast coming in just a few days in honor of Mother's Day. If you haven't seen the Behind the Glass episode that we have on SomTV about Ross Knoll Vineyard, Diane Carpenter, we followed her for almost 7 years during the process. It's a really remarkable story, very tenacious person. I'm going to have her on the podcast in honor of Mother's Day. She is the mother of vines. We will talk to her about her story, but in the meantime, go watch that episode on SomTV. All right, happy Mother's Day, all. Talk to you soon.